The return of our tech gurus. Never before have so many of us depended so completely on our personal technology devices. That's why Andrew Rosenstein says it's so important to be sure to update your operating system whenever an update is offered. Andrew, of course, is part of our regular panel of tech experts, here again to guide us through the amazing and perplexing world of 21st century technology. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, the team answers your questions, talks about the potential for Elon Musk's Starlink internet technology in Maine, the impact of the global chip shortage, telehealth, new ways Maine libraries are connecting us, and more. What are your questions for the tech gurus? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Having technology at our fingertips can be both helpful and maddening. We turn to our tech experts today to help us understand the latest developments in the world of personal technology. My guest today, Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development at the Maine State Library. Andrew Rosenstein, Client Specialist with TKC.io, an IT management company, and Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology. We invite your questions and comments. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page or to Instagram, or to give us a call, old-fashioned technology, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. The irony is not lost on me, guys, that we are having this conversation via Zoom and that Jared Maxfield, you are joining us from your vehicle. But anyway, Jared, I will start with you. What are you seeing at the shop these days? What are the issues that those of us who are so dependent on our technology are bringing to you in a mad panic? What are you solving for people most often right now?
That's a great question. Nice to see everybody here on Zoom. It's back to school time. We're coming out of that time, so we're seeing a lot of everything. But you know, I'll tell you one thing that we see a lot of, you know, really the last 6 months, and I think it's a little COVID related. We replace a lot more batteries in laptops than we used to. And I think a big part of it is, and we're always trying to advise people, but with a lot more folks working from home and in their home office, and they're using their laptops a lot like a desktop. A lot of times, a lot of us tend to leave it on the desk and plugged in 24/7. And it's fairly counterintuitive, but a battery actually wants to be used. It wants to go up and down. If it sits plugged in all the time, it's quite possible that you're going to someone's going to push through the life cycle of that battery faster than they should. And on some machines, with these newer machines, especially when you get into Macs and a lot of the PCs that are thinner and the batteries are internal, you know, these are not inexpensive repairs. So that's actually a thing that we have seen a lot more of, and I think has been COVID driven with our habits. So, you know, I try to encourage people to use your battery, let it run up and down, you know, research the best way to have battery life, because it'll, you know, keep it running longer for your machine. And in the long run, also, you know, just save you some dough instead of having to replace something sooner than you should. But otherwise, you know, we see all the same stuff each and every day, but that's been on the uptick, and I'd like to see some people save some money and not have to have something replaced, especially batteries, because they're so bad for the earth. So that's a whole other story, but I digress.
Andrew Rosenstein, you work with businesses of all kinds. We know that Maine is full of small businesses. What are you hearing from small businesses owners right now? What are the issues that you're helping them solve most often these days?
The greatest challenge for businesses is in the last year and a half has been employees working remotely. And so businesses often have laptops that are business property that are out there that are set up to mirror desktop computers, sometimes in the office and or connect remotely. And it has been a great challenge to keep those networks running and to provide the kind of remote access that people need through the internet to get to their files, to get to the server, to get to the whole bunch of everything.
I remember a couple of years ago, one of you, Jared or Andrew, was trying to convince me about why I ought to be using a VPN. And I think I listened nicely and nodded my head and forgot what a VPN was a couple days later. And I have to say that since I've been working remotely, I use a VPN every day. And I'm sure I'm not the only one, Andrew. You're probably teaching a lot of people about VPNs because that's one of the ways in which people are able to access their desktop or their server at their workplace, right?
Exactly. Getting behind the firewall is a challenge sometimes, but it's been made a lot easier in the last few years because of course, if you're using an Apple computer, you know, it works pretty seamlessly. And Microsoft Windows also has a lot of VPN adaptations built in. So it's pretty seamless when you get it set up correctly, but it is a challenge. And I think that businesses have to be aware that about every 3 to 5 years, there's a cycle of new technology. And that investing in new technology makes things a lot easier than trying to patch what's going wrong with old technology.
Janet McKenney, so. One of the reasons you're on this program is the Maine State Library has really been out in front and trying to make technology accessible for regular people throughout the state of Maine for years now. But this pandemic has really sort of been a catalyst to take it to another level. And there are even more new programs going on now. Tell us about some of the things that are going on right now at the Maine State Library, especially when it comes to connecting people to one another.
Well, one of the things, and this hops right on to what Andrew was talking about, we provided more than half the libraries in the state with Zoom Pro accounts. And it started during COVID so that they could offer virtual programming. And now they're at the point where libraries are opening, but patrons liked the virtual programming. So now libraries, again, it's like ebooks and print books. It's like their programming has to be a hybrid now. They have to offer a virtual portion and they have to offer a face-to-face program as well. So a lot of them are investing into conference webcams like the Owl Web Pro, which looks like an owl and turns 360 degrees. So you can put it on a table in a room and it has 8 microphones. And there's, you know, there are other tech companies. Blue Microphones has a Pro Streamer pack that's a little less expensive, but the libraries are working on including when they do a program, two audiences at the same time. So they need technology to do that. So it's partnered with Zoom. And then the other big thing at the state library, we're working on a statewide initiative called Bendable Maine. And we're creating an online learning platform for all Maine citizens. And so it'll be a place where with their library card, people can access online courses for free. We're going to have community collections that are personal playlists on a particular subject that might be put together by a library with local residents. Very heavy on career collections, working with employers in the state, what skills do they want people applying for jobs to have? And we're using this platform to provide that. And then, you know, allowing local employers and non-profits to utilize the platform to offer stuff for their employees as well. So it's a huge initiative. We're really excited about it. And we're working with the Drucker Institute out in California to get this done in Maine.
And when does that roll out?
It'll roll out probably the end of next summer. So it'll be up and running at this time next year.
All right. Well, our phone number, if you have tech questions, 1-800-399-3566. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or send an email, talk@mainpublic.org. Okay, I have to ask you all what this means Elon Musk recently tweeted that Starlink is, quote, coming out of beta. We have talked about Starlink in the past. Jared Maxfield, I know that Starlink is satellite technology that's supposed to be bringing high-speed internet to places that don't have high-speed internet now. We know that that's a lot of Maine. When we've talked about this in the past, we've had callers say, yeah, it doesn't work so well. I know you care a great deal about this issue. What kind of hope? First of all, tell us what, quote, coming out of beta means. And tell us what kind of hopes you have for Starlink in Maine.
Well, great topic, great question. Starlink is a satellites that are launched. A lot of people who are listening from especially northern Maine may have even seen many of the launches, because when they're launched, they're actually quite visible for a little bit as they go higher into orbit. But it's the simple concept of, you know, broadcasting the internet down from satellites. So we use satellites for all kinds of communications and GPS. And the next step is to deliver internet. It's been happening for a long time. You know, Dish Network and the satellite companies have always had it, but it's just never been a great product. It's not super fast by any means. You're not running your business or, you know, a lot of the things that we talk about day to day off of the standard, what's been around. But with Starlink and coming out of beta, essentially, they've been testing it. These satellites have been up for, I think, well over a year now, and they've been launching more and refining the system and upping the speeds that they can get to folks. So, you know, Janet and Andrew and Jennifer, all of us, we've been talking for, I don't know, half of a decade now about the problems with broadband in Maine and access. You know, so I'm sitting in the middle of Portland, and you're right, I'm in my vehicle on a 5G network on my telephone, and I can see you and I think you can hear me. But we've got folks who are probably within 20, 30 miles of Portland who have virtually no connection options whatsoever. So, I mean, broadband in Maine and anywhere rural is important. It's important for education and for, you know, business development and opening up opportunities for our state. So hopefully something like Starlink, at this point, it's not the grand answer. You know, it's not the fastest by any means, but for a lot of folks, it's going to be A, better than nothing, and then B, I just hope that just like any technology, it starts to exponentially expand, and hopefully, you know, within a decade or so, the need to be running wires everywhere, especially in rural areas, won't be what we need to discuss as much, because there will be other options like Starlink or something like that.
Andrew, are you hopeful? And if so, what is the timetable you are hopeful for?
Well, it's taken a while because there is inherent in all satellite communications is a latency period where the signal reaches the satellite and then takes time to get back to the user. And so satellite internet has been a distant second to broadband. But somehow, of course, the brilliance of Elon Musk has overcome, and his engineers have overcome a lot of these technical issues to create satellite broadband service that is almost equal to what we have, you know, on the ground as wired service, fiber optic or cable. He's achieving speeds of 100 megabytes per second, and that's pretty much on par with what you'd get on a, you know, pretty fast service. So that means you can use satellite internet for gaming, you know, probably not always, depending on weather conditions, but it's a big advance. And the service has been rolled out as the satellites become orbital. So meaning about 100,000 people have been part of the beta testing around the world. And as satellites are launched and positioned over continents, the service becomes more available to users. So we've got some people in Maine testing, and probably in the next year or so, it's going to become something that you can actually get especially now that it's out of beta testing, which means some of the kinks have been worked out.
That's what out of beta means. Some of the kinks have worked out.
Yes, there are probably some others, but most of the major ones have been worked out.
Well, Janet, I understand there are libraries in Maine, part of this testing of the Starlink system.
Well, it's actually the Maine State Librarian himself, because he lives in rural Maine and lives in Northport, and he moved there recently, and really his bandwidth was not, you know, allowing him to Zoom into state meetings or work remotely effectively. So he got hooked up with Starlink, and he's seen tremendous improvement over what he had. He said, you know, he's in a rural part, he's surrounded by trees, but he has a small opening to the north sky. So he says he's pulling down 150 down and 20 up, which isn't fabulous, but compared to what he had, he says it's great. And he's had just a couple of glitches, but nothing he hasn't been able to deal with.
So interesting. Well, let's talk about something else in the news, the global microchip shortage. We've heard about this mainly in terms of automobiles and how hard it is to buy a new car. It's affected the rental car market. But obviously, it's very important for the technology market. And I'm wondering, I'll turn back to you, Andrew. What does this mean today for technology? And what is it going to mean in the years to come?
Well, one of the things that it means is that a company like Apple is building their own chips, so they have more control over supply. And the new, for instance, iPhones for the last couple of years have had the A14 chip and now the A15 chip, which is manufactured by Apple specifically for the phone. And they've been making their own chips for MacBook Pros as well. Rather than relying on this global chip market, they've been making their own. But the biggest problem is that for the automotive industry, cars rely on anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 chips per vehicle. So, for instance, Ford has had cars unfinished, parked in enormous parking lots all over the country, and they're just waiting for the supply to perk up. And it's even affected anybody who's tried to build a home-built computer has found that they can't get a video card. Those are just not available. And so as we ramp up chip manufacturing, and there have been a couple of reasons why this shortage has occurred, because of COVID, of course, and factories being shut down. Also, the enormous need that we've all had for new devices as we're working from home, or as our home work life has changed. In the next couple of years, there's going to be a chip glut because all of a sudden we've ramped up manufacturing, which is 6 months to a year out. And by 2023, we're going to be having more chips than we know what to do with. So that's always an issue with supply and demand, but I'm sure we'll find something to do with those extra chips.
Okay, I want to continue the chip conversation in just a minute, but we do need to go to a break. We also want to take your personal technology questions on Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. The email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from CAPE Integrative Health, committed to working with Medicare patients to treat chronic lower back pain with acupuncture. Learn more at CAPEintegrativehealth.com. And by A Family for Me, a Spurwink program committed to raising awareness of the need for foster and adoptive parents. Learn more at AFamilyForMeMaine.org. There'll be a special briefing on the coronavirus by Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah this afternoon at 2. The live briefing will be available on Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and on the Maine Public Facebook page. Today's briefing will be archived on our website for later on-demand viewing. Once again, a special Maine CDC briefing with Dr. Shah today at 2 on Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, and at MainePublic.org.
Hello. Supply chain?
We had a quote for $30,000 to get our components to us. And typically it would be somewhere between like 11 to 13.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Supply, demand, and price. Next time on Marketplace.
And you can hear Marketplace this evening at 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. We have our tech team today to answer your questions about phones, computers, home devices, security, and other technology issues. Joining me, Andrew Rosenstein, who is a client specialist with TKC.io. Jared Maxfield is the owner of Necessary Technology, and Janet McKinney, the Maine State Library Director of Library Development. Share your comments or questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Before we get to listener questions, though, I want to continue the conversation about the chip shortage. And Jared, you have a very sort of practical take on this, don't you?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, but because Andrew's right, you know, everything is short. I ordered a random thing. I ordered a key. You know, it's not just it's a key. You know, even the keys for our cars. I ordered one probably from the manufacturer over 5 months ago. We can't get a key for a car. So keeping that in mind, and I don't want to rush things, today being the first day of fall, but it's not a bad idea, honestly, if you are thinking about especially electronics. For folks or for yourself for the holiday season, to perhaps be thinking about those things early this year and trying to get ahead of that rush, because as Andrew mentioned, you know, with the glut of shortages and manufacturers trying to keep up, I can assure you in the holiday season, there will be all kinds of things, and it's not just going to be computers and cars. I mean, lots of things have chips in it and things that you won't even think about that will run into supply chain issues. So, you know, if there's something you're thinking about and you're one of the early birds, it's usually not me. Maybe this year will be the year, but something to think about, because those supply chain issues, especially with chips, affect a lot more than those big ticket items we're thinking about. Everything, a lot of small things and things we're going to want. So Janet, don't want to rush the holidays, but here we are.
Janet, anything to add? Any thoughts on the global chip shortage?
I just know nationally with the ARPA money, so many of state libraries are, you know, trying to get hotspots into libraries so that they can be lent to people so that they can access. And there's been a real shortage and a hard time getting large quantities for some of the larger library systems. And I'm wondering if that's not only the manufacturing of the hotspots themselves, but also the chip that might have to go into that to help connect. So yeah, shortages everywhere.
Go to a couple questions here. This is from Margaret at email. My best friend and I visited a resort in Western Massachusetts recently. She connected to the free Wi-Fi there with her smartphone. When we return to Maine, her phone has been receiving odd emails and ads, and even made a call to Russia. What could she have done to prevent all this? Who wants to take it? Oh my gosh, Andrew, I see you rubbing your forehead there. Go ahead. You get to take
yes.
it.
Yes. Never connect to the free Wi-Fi. That is, wherever you are, if you see free Wi-Fi pop up, just don't do it. If you're going to connect to Wi-Fi, make sure that it's password protected, meaning that if you're staying in a hotel, that you have a password with your room number and your last name, for instance, and that you're just careful not to click on anything that pops up on your screen. This happens all the time with people in airports, clicking on free Wi-Fi. I think the best security that people can have while they're traveling is to either carry your own Wi-Fi with a mobile device from AT&T or Verizon or any other big cell companies. You can bring your own Wi-Fi with you, and that connects to the cell network and will provide Wi-Fi for your devices. Or if you can enable your phone as a hotspot use the cell network. It's probably, you can't, you know, watch movies and suck down huge, vast amounts of data, but, you know, it might get you into a situation where you can check your airline reservation or, you know, travel plans without connecting your phone to Russian hackers.
Explain to me what you mean by carry your own Wi-Fi.
Well, most of the cell companies have devices that work off of the cell network that are pocket sized. And if you travel a lot, that it's not a bad idea. For instance, Verizon, I think, has something called MiFi. AT&T has a similar product. And they provide a Wi-Fi hotspot that's your personal device that has your own password, same as you do at home, except you carry it with you and it sends your Wi-Fi signal over the cell network. So it doesn't always provide a lot of data, but it is secure because it's your network.
Okay. And if you are, like you said, in a hotel room or in a situation where there is a password, that's different. That's if you're at a friend's house and they have a password, that's different. It's the free mm-hmm. Wi-Fi with no password that you need to be cautious of.
Yes, that's often an entry point for bad guys to get onto your phone. Doesn't happen all the time, but it's a pretty good spot for instance, if you're in an airport and you connect to the free airport Wi-Fi, you know, make sure that it is legitimate, because it's not a difficult thing for bad characters to carry around devices that will provide you with free Wi-Fi service, but they're really just scooping up data from your phone and snooping on your phone, not to make everybody paranoid, but it's the same way you lock your car when you're leaving it in a garage overnight. You want to lock your phone when you're traveling, and the best way is to know how you're connecting to the internet.
Jared or Janet, anything to add to that?
Well, I would say use a local public library's Wi-Fi. It's usually always free, and you know, they provide access, and they're, you know, it's secure, and they're not, you know, hooking up with any bad characters. But it is hard for the everyday person to see that list of free Wi-Fi and know what to choose, and that's why you kind of have to look for, you know, the name Hilton rather than, you know, like Joe's free wireless. But, you know, sometimes they just see free wireless, and you can have a load of them, you know, especially as Andrew said, when you're in an airport. But, you know, like pick the one that the airport is offering and not one that doesn't have a, you know, specific name to it.
All right, Jared.
No, everyone made great points. I think Andrew used the word paranoid, and you don't want people to be paranoid, but actually I'm going to go the other. Sometimes I want my customers to be a little bit paranoid. I want you to think about what you're clicking on and not just blindly click on things, because frankly, a lot of the issues that we end up with compromising information about ourselves or passwords, things like that, unfortunately, oftentimes it's things that we walk ourselves into, and, you know, we, you know, blindly connect to that free Wi-Fi. We blindly, you know, fill out the random Facebook survey that brings us to some third party website that puts who knows what on our computer. It's just knowing what you're clicking on and you know, kind of be a little paranoid, because these days you really should, because like Andrew said, like you wouldn't hand over the keys to your car or your house to somebody so easily, but we tend to hand over electronic information quite easily without thinking about it. And if done the wrong way or with the wrong bad characters, then that can create a lot of issues for people, you know, deep ones, you know, especially when you get into some of these deeper levels of hacking and personal information being compromised. So nothing wrong with a little healthy paranoia when it comes to your devices, and, you know, plan for the worst, hope for the best. There's nothing wrong with that.
A Jared Maxfield quote for the day. Nothing wrong with a little healthy paranoia. An email here from Carl. Google phones are absolute junk. My HTC just seized up. There was a class action lawsuit on that, to which all money was gone by the time my phone failed. Then my Google Pixel phone failed, not once but twice in a single year. So did my wife's Pixel 2. The charger connections failed in the phone. Who has an opinion about Google phones?
Well, I mean, sometimes you get what you pay for sometimes, and phones are expensive, and the average phone should last 3 to 4 years, even though we're on a 1 to 2 year replacement cycle. There's no reason why you can't use a phone for 4 years. And if manufacturers are not making phones that stand up to that, then you've got to look elsewhere. I think before you purchase a phone, it's really wise to do some research, whether it's a Samsung phone or an Apple phone. You know, those are the two leading manufacturers of reliable products that'll be there for a while.
It also, I'll just throw in real, it also comes down a lot to the repairs, you know, not to hype Apple too much or Samsung, like Andrew just said, but those are going to be phones where, because so much volume is sold and so many people have those phones, if you do have an issue, you're going to have a lot more repair opportunities, you know, for somebody local. Folks come into my store all the time with a lot of random Google phones or carrier phones, things like that, which they're not repairable. You know, they're not provided parts. There's not access. The cost for repair might, you know, be more than what the phone is worth. So researching, you know, not only the quality of the phones, but also the, you know, hopefully you don't need it, but the repairability of those phones as well, because too many phones will, you spend less money, but if it breaks in the wrong way and it becomes a throwaway, in the long run, it'll cost you more.
All right, we'll go to an email here from Cindy. Can you review what some signs are that an email or link that is sent to you on social media is a scam? It seems these have gotten more sophisticated, so the logos look legitimate and it is not that obvious that it's fake. Janet, I'll start with you. I'll have everybody answer this one, because we had a training here at Maine Public and we learned how sophisticated some of these can be. What are you teaching librarians, Jana, and what are they teaching their customers?
Yeah, you know, part of it is really looking at that email and what it says and what it's asking you to do. You know, most of the providers will say, you know, we'll never send you an email like this. A lot of times it's just hovering over the email address itself and see that, you know, what is like info at AT&T is actually, you know, like some random name at some other actual email address. So, you know, it's really bringing some scrutiny to those and making sure that it's from who it says it is. And so, you know, the paranoia that Jared was just talking about, if something just doesn't ring true, I think so many of us, we're trying to get everything done really quickly. And so part of it is, you know, take a deep breath and read that again and hover over some things and look for something that might not necessarily be in alignment. They are getting trickier and trickier. You know, the state has us go through security training as well. And, you know, it's, you know, people are always looking at ways to, you know, fish information from you, and you know they get really good at imitating people. So, you know, check out a couple of things, and you know, is that really from the entity? You know, by the way the email address is constructed and what's hidden behind that email address.
Andrew, I saw you nodding.
Absolutely, Janet is so right, because it's the URL that we often have to take a look at, or the you know, that sometimes if there's a link buried in your email, if that doesn't seem correct at all, you can hover your cursor over that, both your email address area and any kind of links within the email without clicking on them, and see what it really says. And often, it seems pretty phony. In fact, Microsoft, I ran across this the other day, Microsoft has a security page where they have the three email addresses that they use, And they say he will never get an email from any other address if we contact you under any circumstances. And most important to remember is that these companies will, like Google and Apple and Microsoft, they will not contact you. There's really no reason for them to contact you. If you get an email that says your bill hasn't been paid, click here and pay it. It's pretty easy to double check that with your banking information or by signing in directly to your provider, which is something I always encourage people to do. If they get a funny sounding email that seems very urgent, click onto your browser and securely sign in to your provider and double check. Is your bill paid? Do you owe any money on that? I mean, there was a scam a few years ago where people were directed to pay a bill at by using Bitcoin, and they hadn't checked to see whether they really even owed that money. And people lined up and paid directly, thousands of dollars sometimes. So the scams have gotten much more sophisticated, and slowing down is the biggest, and taking a moment to think. I know it doesn't work when you're in a rush and when you're looking at a lot of email, but generally nothing is as urgent as it sounds when you get an email.
Good advice with so many things in life, Jared.
Well, Andrew, what he just says, urgency. So any, you know, and Janet said it too. If it doesn't look right, if it doesn't feel right, if you're reading it over and over to figure out if it's right, it's wrong. And you know that. And that's part of personal technology responsibility, because we have folks come in all the time. They have an email, and I'm going to tell you if you ask me about an email, here's my advice. Don't click on it. If it's a real email, don't click on it. Just get in the habit of not clicking on emails, links in emails, or anything like that. If it's we've all seen the, hey, your Amazon order for $899 just went through. If this isn't you, click on this link or call the number. Don't click on the link. Don't call the number. Like Andrew said, go direct to that company's website, call their customer service, call your bank directly, see if it's legitimate. It's worth the extra time. So I actually honestly like to start to get in the habit of just telling, honestly, for most emails, unless you just solicited it and you're 100% sure, just get in the habit of not clicking on them. Verify another way and just don't worry. If it creates that sense of urgency, you already know the answer. You should not be even entertaining it. Hit delete, move on with your life.
We are going to take another quick break. More of your comments and questions. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from BCM Environmental and Land Law of Northern New England, helping landowners, farmers, and governments problem solve. BCMEnviroLaw.com.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. School bus drivers are in high demand. The director of a bus fleet in one Arizona district had to start driving a van full of kids himself, surprising parents when he showed up at the bus stop in a shirt and tie.
The parents were looking at me, and they were like, who is this guy? Hi, you know, you have to greet him. I'm the director.
Solving the bus driver shortage next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us. Here and Now upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. Not only is Maine Public Television available free over the air, it's also streaming live at mainepublic.org. You can enjoy all of your favorite PBS and Maine Public Television programs and even discover new favorites throughout the day. Check it out at mainepublic.org/mptv. And if you're without internet, you can still access Maine Public's 4 television stations over the air with an HD TV antenna. To learn more about Maine Public Television over the air and for helpful information on choosing your antenna, please visit mainepublic.org. And free access to Maine Public Television is made possible through the generous support of our members. Consider becoming a member today to help us deliver this great service to our neighbors throughout Maine.
I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about the latest in personal technology and answer your questions. With me today, Jared Maxfield with Necessary Technology, Janet McKenney with the Maine State Library, and Andrew Rosenstein with TKC.io. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet @MaineCalling. Post on Facebook or to Instagram. And please be quick. quick. We're coming toward the end of the program. An email here from Kim. I am overwhelmed by the number of possible ways to store and organize photos. iPhotos, Google Photos, Amazon Photos, and so many more possibilities online. I've looked at some very appealing apps that quickly help eliminate duplicates and help to organize and store hundreds of photos more easily. Wondering what your thoughts are for the simplest and best ways to keep things organized. I don't know, scanning you all on Zoom. Janet, do you like simple and best? No, you're shaking your head. Who is that?
I'm the worst person because I just pay the extra 99 cents so that my Apple iCloud will hold the photos that I need. You know, I'm not really good at organizing them, but I am really good at once every quarter, I go through and I delete all those unnecessary photos taken, you know, at a restaurant or some weird thing of somebody's license plate. So I like deleting more than storing and organizing.
Oh my goodness. Every quarter, something else to put on my ever growing to-do list. Okay, Andrew, got an app for me? Jared? Andrew, you go first.
I'm just wondering why she's taking pictures of license plates, but that's another story.
Funny license plates, I'm sure. Okay, Andrew, go ahead.
I'm just a big fan of keeping everything in one place. Decide on a cloud storage method, whether it's iCloud, OneDrive, and you know the big players are the most reliable. Stick with it, pay the money, it's worth it. And then also you want a hard drive that you can hold in your hand and keep in your house. Get a you know a big, reliable hard drive made by a company like GTEC or you know, one of the big players, and back up that photo library. It might take a RAID, which is a box of multiple drives that are linked together. That gives you a lot of storage, maybe 10 to 12 terabytes. That's something to consider too.
We're going to go to Sean calling from Augusta. Hi, Sean, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to mention about the PET scans. I missed kind of the first 15, 20 minutes of the show. I don't know if you guys have gone over it, but they seem to be incredibly successful with people that are, you know, they show a cute little cat or a cute little dog. I had a friend, and I wanted to call in because I heard the bit about slowing down before you click a link or with the people paying Bitcoin for a bill. Because I had demonstrated to this friend, because I work with IT and computers, and I had showed her the evidence, like, this is 99.9%, I'm confident, is a scam. She inevitably, a couple days later, sent the money and was, you know, ripped off, essentially. And I just wanted to say, I think wishful thinking, I don't know what it is, and it's something that's made me think, because this was a couple of years ago. And I just wanted to put that out there in case people don't know. The PET scam thing, it's incredibly successful because they show you a cute cat or a cute dog. And, oh, you got to send the money. We're in Minnesota or Georgia. And, so I just wanted to put that bit out there and, you know, let people know to be careful and do your homework. And that's it.
Thanks, Sean, for the warning. I see some nods from our guests, so I appreciate you calling and talking about this one. An email here from Curtis. Speaking of paranoid, could your guest please comment on the recent Pegasus problem on Apple devices? How concerned should Apple users be? Also, two nights ago, a sleeping computer woke up in the middle of the night by itself. What would cause such a thing? We had no power outage. Well, Andrew, what is the Pegasus problem?
That's again one of these, you know, click on a link and it gets loaded on, or it's a virus, and the best way, Apple is really vigilant about providing updates. They've just provided a new update to iOS 14, and paving the way for you to update to 15. Bad guys are always going to stay a step ahead. So, you know, but you can keep up with them by updating your phone. And a lot of people don't update their operating systems, which is the the most important way that you can keep secure. And anytime a computer wakes up from sleep, especially if it's an Apple computer, it may have just completed an update. Often those updates occur overnight. They occur with Windows machines scheduled for off hours. So likely that's what may be happening, but you can check your logs and see if an update was installed.
An email here from Eric. There is a service called GigSky that is a paid service to connect to worldwide cell network. I've used this service in Canada and the UK. I think it's safe. Do your guests know of this service? Jared, I'll turn to you. Do you know about GigSky?
I do not. That is one I've not heard of. So I would just, I don't have any good advice to give or say anything about it, but I would, anytime we learn about something, just like if right now I don't know about it, my first steps would be to go online and research everything I could and learn about it, especially if someone's using it and they're not 100% sure what it is, you know, just like Andrew mentioned that before, especially if you're going to connect a device to some sort of network where you'll be passing information back and forth, do your due diligence. So I don't know what it is off the top of my head. It's probably a legit service, but a little couple minutes to confirm that for someone is not the, the worst idea.
And Janitor Andrew, either of you heard of GigSky?
No, I'm not familiar with that, but I did want to go back to the Pegasus issue. That is actually spyware that that is developed by the Israelis to spy on. And it's actually such an expensive application that only super bad guys can afford to install it. So unless you're doing something that involves, meddling with Israeli security forces, you're probably okay.
An email here from Veronica. I have a new iPhone 12. It will not connect to any of my Bluetooth devices. Tried turning on things and off again. Any suggestions? I'm going to look at all three of you. Janet, is that one for you? No?
Making sure everything's updated so new products work with older phones, you know, so it could be like the versioning of Bluetooth. So first I would say, make sure your iPhone is updated and then read the details about this product and, you know, is it, you know, the type of Bluetooth that it is. And sometimes you have to turn off and restart all the things so that they can make that handshake. I don't know. Andrew and Jared probably know a heck of a lot more about Bluetooth than I do.
Sure, but I do like that. Yeah, so make sure it's charged. But I like that, Janet, because I've learned that with some of the technology I've had to work with here, hosting main calling remotely, that the turning off and restarting is every single device that you're working with all along the chain here. I'm looking at about 7 devices in front of me right now, and I think I've done them all, but maybe I forgot that one little box. But Andrew, this brings you up to one of your other favorite topics, which is updating.
Yes, I can't say that enough. I don't know why. I mean, if you love an operating system and you don't want to be at risk on the internet, then don't use, you know, Windows Vista to check on your online banking. So it's really important. The reason that there are so many annoying updates, and we all are annoyed by them, is that there are a lot of security risks out there, and each update addresses a security patch. Of course, sometimes the updates don't always go very well. The Microsoft update that came last week messed with a lot of network printers. So that doesn't always, and kept a lot of admins up at night trying to fix that. But most updates are safe and secure your device. So, and also they offer better features. For instance, the new Apple updates help secure your mail settings and make mail more private. So that's not a good, that's not a bad thing to want to do.
Okay, I'm sending this next one to you, Jared. An email from Tony. My father-in-law is 91 and mostly housebound, trying to stay safe. This has led to his digital footprint expanding beyond his aptitude to understand safe and non-safe clicks. Any advice? for an older person who is really enjoying technology. And I know it's been such a lifeline for many people who are finding it as a way to connect to others, and especially during the pandemic. Are there ways or settings, things one can do to help someone be digitally safe when they're alone in their apartment and maybe have not lived a whole lifetime with this kind of technology?
Sure. Well, you know, it's a tough one because the first answer is always just education and repetition as much as we can. Sometimes with someone who doesn't have a lot of experience, young or old, with technology, there's just going to be natural pitfalls and issues that they're going to run into. So as much as you can educate, as much as you can teach, you know, best practices and repetition, that's one way. Number two, it all depends, I guess, on what type of device. I mean, a lot of times, you know, in that type of instance, I think a great device for someone like that would be an iPad. Easy, you know, it's portable. You can access all the things you're going to do normally, you know, email, internet, music, videos, word processing, simple things, which are what's going to encompass, you know, 80% of users. But also, you know, with an Apple system, it's a lot more secure, for example, than an Android-based tablet or a Windows-based machine, where those errant clicks on the wrong websites or emails can create a lot more issues just because those machines are more susceptible to being infected with, you know, things that will straight up compromise your data. Whereas Apple's products definitely have a lot more protections and also are quite simple and straightforward often. So depends on the device. If you can get that type of device on a Windows device, if you can use ad blockers or extensions like ad blocker or Ghostery, things that will help reduce some of those calm temptations that might be there to click on. Those are all some things to try. But at the end of the day, and I know it's not the easiest, but education and repetition of best practices is the, you know, what we try to teach people.
And I know, Janet, now that libraries are opening back up, that there are resources at your local library where people can either work with a librarian or even go to a class. We just have a few seconds left. I want to circle back to something else. I believe it was Jared giving you a hard time, Janet, about taking pictures of license plates. I understand you have a vanity license plate of your own.
Yeah, so I'm e-bookworm, you know, and there's another librarian who is bookworm, but Maine has such great vanity plates, and it's like a little hobby of mine. You know, you go into a parking lot, and all of a sudden you see a great vanity plate. I tend to take a picture of it, especially if I can't figure out what it is right away. But, you know, everybody that comes to this state asks about why there are so many vanity plates in Maine and what is it about Mainers and vanity plates. So, you know, that's why I take pictures. I'm not working for the police department or trying to figure out who people are.
So you're exonerated and we're going to say goodbye. Thank you all for joining us as always. Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development with the Maine State Library, Andrew Rosenstein with TKC.io, and Jared Maxfield with Necessary Technology. Today's sound engineer, KG Akeem Aladun. Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn produce Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.